Colin Cullis with Business Unusual this evening. Now, Colin Cullis, usually you talk about the possible. Usually you talk about things that we can kind of conceptualize. Tonight, you're going crazy.
Yeah, the moonshots. And I keep this kind of folded.
What is a moonshot?
Well, it literally comes from the Apollo thing. So when they said, let's land on the moon, it's like, no, I don't think you'll get that right. Well, let's give it a go. And since then, they just refer to any really outlandishly ambitious project as a moonshot.
Okay.
And so anyways, I've got this kind of folder of stuff, and I come across and think, oh, this could be a Business Unusual. I think, nah, that'll never happen. And after a while, I had a look at this folder. It's getting a bit old and smelly now, but I had a look at it, and some of the stuff has actually happened. Not in the full, you know, but it's kind of moved on. And I'm kind of amazed. I'll give you one example from this week. We spoke about these esports and the rise of esports. Well, the Asia Games are underway at the moment, and Tencent has three of the games being played. They're not going to get medals this year, but they're definitely going to be acknowledged for being now athletes. And probably in the next Olympics, they will be playing it. So this is the kind of moonshots that perhaps not in the exact form I'm going to try and describe them this evening, but at some point they will turn into some or other kinds of project that we might say, wow, can't imagine not living before this.
And what's so exciting about this is when stuff seems impossible, you're not going to achieve the seemingly impossible unless you set what they call BHAGs, big, hairy, audacious goals. And you say, right, yes, it's impossible now, but let's work towards it. We may never achieve that goal, but we may learn something else. We'll discover Teflon, or we'll do something amazing as a result.
Exactly right. Now, I often make a reference to Stephen Johnson. He's got this book about how we got to now and how, you know, creativity works and everything else. And he says, listen, we can make practical things from the adjacent possible. But what becomes possible, he says, there you should be as crazy as anything. Because when you imagine something nuts, you try and do something that's maybe just a little less nuts. And then when you compare them, you start getting there. So let's use a mobile phone, for example, or a smartphone in particular. The notion wasn't that nobody could conceive what this amazing thing would be. In fact, I've got a show in lined up with a little magic company, I think it was called, that kind of was predicting the smartphone in the 90s. But they couldn't build it because they didn't have touchscreens. They didn't have processors capable of doing it. They didn't kind of make the leap in their own minds about how would we build this thing, because, of course, nothing existed like that. So the conception to the actual building requires some things to catch up. That's the kind of adjacent possible. But every now and then, you almost need to inspire people with these moonshot-type things, and they say, oh, well, let's give it a go. You fail, but where you fall short is like, well, that's not bad. It's actually quite a good thing. And so my first one, and let me start with this one because it's probably a well-known one. Do you know the story of Velcro?
I mean, it's a guy who was walking in New Zealand over a hill, and he got burrs stuck in his socks, and he couldn't figure out why they were so difficult to pull out. So he put them under a microscope, and he went, there are little hooks in there. Imagine if we did this with plasticky stuff.
Fantastically right. It was Switzerland.
Switzerland. It's like New Zealand.
Walking his dog.
There are hobbits and hills.
Indeed. But that's pretty much nailed it. He saw something in nature and he figured, hey, this could be a useful material. So he copied it. And the first one I have for you is a woman who's got an interesting background. She's kind of a movie maker and a bit of a scientist. And she read a paper, not thinking she'd do much of it. And these scientists are referring to a tiny little bee that they were researching. They said that its nest filler looked like cellophane. That was the sum total of what they said. She said, cellophane, that sounds interesting. Maybe I'll do something about this, make a little movie. And she started looking and says, this doesn't just look like cellophane, it seems to really look like cellophane. It's a cling wrap. And so she started researching this tiny little masked bee, it's called. And now here's something I didn't know about bees, that they are solitary bees. And this is it just lives on its own in a little wooden hole in New Zealand. So you got that bit right for your intuition. And the first stumbling block she had is that they're kind of rare. So trying to catch one of these things was kind of tricky. So she popped over to Australia and she managed to catch a couple more there. And they started looking at the substance that it creates for making this little stuff between its little, the pupa. And they're busy testing that out now. But its properties currently are waterproof, heat resistant, and flame retardant. Huge resistance to pH, so high and low acidity and alkalinity. Effectively, it could become a better bioplastic, but it's not made of plastic. It will just, you know, biodegrade. And perhaps it won't like replace all plastics, because that's really asking a lot. But given how much and everywhere we use plastics, then things for like fabrics, for medical stuff, it's got so many applications if they can find out how to extract and if the actual substance has that property. And then you imagine, well, if this is a rare tiny little bee, it's less than a centimeter big, kind of nasty if you're going to go and enslave all these little bees.
But and artificially inseminate bee populations and that gets messy.
It does, but here's the adjacent possible. Back in the day when we first discovered insulin, we figured, well, how are we going to create all this insulin? Well, they've already got bacteria that produce insulin for us, and they can make bucket loads of the stuff. So they figure, well, once we know what this material is, can we get some bacteria to synthesize it for us? Then it can synthesize it on a much broader scale. And we can potentially
once you know what the compound is, once you know what the makeup of it, you can study its DNA, then you've got a chance of rebuilding it and recreating it.
Exactly right. So that's our first moonshot, a bioplastic thanks to this bee. The second one is a super hard-wearing material. And I think the mine owners in this country, particularly for South Africa, were platinum, because it involves probably one of the hardest-wearing substances we have yet been able to create. It's an alloy of gold and platinum. So you think, oh, that's going to be expensive, except you don't need a lot of it. It's a coating rather than build a cog or an engine turbine or a piston seal.
Finally,
out of the stuff.
A practical use to take over from autocatalytic converters.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the crazy thing about it was everybody thought, well, to be a really hard-wearing surface, it basically need to be like a diamond or sapphire, really hard stuff. And what they found is actually hard-wearingness is more a product of heat resistance. So don't absorb heat, to be able to resist heat very well. And gold and platinum supposedly does this exceptionally well. And while testing out the material, which they kind of modeled rather than, mixing it up, it's a 90-10 split between platinum and gold, they noticed something else when this thing was being rubbed with the friction. It started forming a sort of a carbon layer on top of it. Now, carbon, effectively, when arranged in a certain way, is diamond. It makes its own diamond lubricant. Hard-wearing, self-lubricating, crazy amazing stuff. Put this on car engines, put this on turbines, put this on anything that needs to sort of increase service intervals between things.
Yeah.
And we could be onto something. And we can go continue mining the stuff. So that's number three, our super hard-wearing, self-lubricating stuff.
You've got to see Colin Cullis's face, by the way. He's got the look of a mad professor, which is a good look. It suits him. But he's getting very into this idea of wacky, crazy ideas that may just materialize from science fiction into fact.
Because it does feel sometimes that, like, we've invented everything. There can't be much more for us to find out. I mean, man, we've done it all. And then you see these things, you think, like, wow, we're only scratching the surface. And this next one really does make my eyes kind of roll, because hard to describe it anyway. So if the latest cell phones right now use processor chips with transistors on them. This is the thing that allowed us to do all this computing power. And the iPhone X, the A11 chip, has over 4 billion transistors. You can't imagine 4 billion of anything stuck on a little thing, except it's if you've got one of them in your pocket, then that's inside there. To give you some indication as to how small these things are, and they're built on a 10 nanometer architecture. Again, that's not even a unit we can imagine. 10 nanometers is 10 millionths of a meter. And that is small enough that if you had to line them up on the width of your hair, generally given as the smallest thing we can easily see before having to scratch around and find something to magnify it, then you get about 8,000 of them side by side. That's our current computing. And it uses electrons. But the problem when you get much smaller than that, electrons start doing crazy things and you start drifting off into this quantum realm, which we attempted once in the past, and it's kind of crazy. So there are quantum computers, and they don't use electrons traveling. They use the spin states of actual atoms. But that's kind of tricky, because you've got to be super cool. And to make it super cold, you've got to make them really big. Not likely going to be walking around with a quantum CPU in your cell phone. But then this guy from the Karlsruhe Institute of Technology have managed to create a transistor consisting of a single atom. How you can move a single atom to be in an on-off state. It's either there or it's not there. And then they did this in a gel, so it can be, it's kind of amorphous. It can really fit in if you think about the space you want to make it fit in. And they can do it at room temperature. Now that's just mad. Because if you think the Moore's law curve, we'd sort of said this year, we kind of reached the top of it. We can't keep doubling this price.
Moore's law was that you would computing power would double every 18 months.
Correct.
Wasn't it?
Yeah. And pretty much from the 70s when it was first suggested, it's been holding pretty much right on that.
And we kind of reached a point this year where they went, okay, can't do this anymore. Moore's law no longer works.
Yeah, the physical world just won't allow electrons to work at such small scales.
Except and this could be the breakthrough.
10 times the factor can be go. Moore's law can restart again. And because they're starting off now, they don't know how it works. They're not quite sure how it works. It'll be rubbish. And then it'll start getting better. And so that whole curve can just restart up again. And so with these three absolutely bonkers concepts, which, I doubt any of them will come to fruition in the form that we want. And again, it won't happen next year. But in 10 years from now, and it's amazing how quickly 10 years passes when you think about this.
Yes.
The old cell phone's 10 years old. 10 years from now, we'll be talking about a atomic computing chip that, I can't even make up what will happen in the future. Suffice to say.
Will we be talking about it, or will the chip be talking about itself?
Well, you're scaring me now.
Colin Cullis with Business Unusual.